105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media. I'm Tatiana Morani.
And I'm Dave Pablo. Today, we're looking at the 35th anniversary of the Solidarity Committee of the Capital District with our correspondent, Willie Terry.
Then we have part two of correspondent Aaron Pettinati's interview with Jamie Stevenson, founder of Tech Valley's Game Space.
Afterwards, we'll hear from correspondent Kat Jones. She spoke with Chris, an individual who is a homeless person, about coming in from the cold, finally getting a place to live for the first time in 2 years.
And correspondent Kleanna Lightburn sat down with local artist Liv McKee to talk about her upcoming book release titled Bulb.
We'll also hear part one of a report on the quote-unquote healthcare protest rally at the Troy Hilton Hotel on November 15, 2018, against the New York Health Plan Association campaign to stop creation of a single-payer's healthcare system in New York State.
And we have a story about local store owners' disputes with the Troy Waterfront Farmers Market. Let's start off the show with some headlines.
More than 80 officials, including 50 mayors, came to Albany on Monday to discuss the New York State Conference of Mayors' priorities for the upcoming 2019 legislative session. In past years, NYCOM has sought to boost municipal government aid revenues, and this year they are proposing new funding streams more in line with the governor's vision, such as economic development grants and an internet sales tax proposed by Cuomo in last year's budget proposal. NYCOM this week announced a new $100 million municipal investment initiative that would provide need-based funding to cities, villages, and towns while incorporating shared services. The municipal aid would be tied to municipalities completing multi-year financial plans, engaging in efforts to encourage economic growth, and working collaboratively to accomplish goals set by the Regional Economic Development Council.
34% of U.S. parents said their child was unlikely to get the flu shot vaccine this year, according to a report published Monday by C.S. Mott Children's Hospital. Of parents polled, 48% said they usually followed the recommendations of their child's health care provider when making choices about the flu vaccine. However, 21% of those surveyed did not remember their health care provider making a recommendation about their child receiving the flu shot. The remaining parents stated they did not believe the vaccine was effective.
Council members are expected to approve Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan's $176.97 million 2019 budget at tonight's regular Common Council meeting. The budget includes expanding a $90 per unit trash fee to single-family homeowners, a cost previously covered by those who own two-, three-, and four-family homes, as a bridge to a long-term solution for waste collection in Albany. Beyond the trash fee, the city's 2019 budget keeps the city's tax levy the same as this year and includes 1% raises for white-collar, non-union employees. Council members also are proposing an $180,000 increase to the equipment line for the fire department, which will be covered by an anticipated $180,000 more in sales tax revenue. As for the proposed $29.3 million borrowing for buying and converting the city's streetlights to LED, that matter will be taken up separately.
Delilah Yeend, a Troy mother of two facing deportation, had her case dismissed in immigration court Monday morning after filing a green card application with funds donated by strangers. Yeend can no longer be deported, doesn't have to return to immigration court near Buffalo or check in with the government while her application to become a permanent resident based on her petition as a domestic violence survivor is pending. It could take up to a year to get an answer, but her attorney, Sienna McLean, who practices near Buffalo, said she has a good chance of getting it because she already has an approved petition.
The remains of a soldier reported missing in action in North Korea almost 68 years ago have been identified as Army PFC John W. Martin of Saratoga, according to the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency. The agency contained within the Department of Defense said that Martin was reported missing in action on December 2, 1950, after he was last seen near the Chosin Reservoir. At the time, the scene of one of the war's most decisive battles. Martin's remains will be reburied December 2nd in Saratoga. Details of the service were not immediately available.
The Brooklyn-based rapper and Instagram star known as 6ix9ine was in federal custody Monday on racketeering and firearms charges, the authorities said. The rapper, whose real name is Danielle Hernandez, was detained along with three members of his one-time management team, including Gafano Jordan, known as Shoddy, hours after Mr. Hernandez left the courtroom on October 26th. However, there was a McLee and a shooting at a restaurant on Manhattan's Upper East Side where Mr. Hernandez had gone to meet the head of his record label. Mr. Gafano was arrested in the incident and charged with assault in connection with McLee, which resulted in a bodyguard firing in self-defense. Also arrested in the racketeering charges was Freehem Walter, known as Crippy, who was injured in the shooting. The new arrest was the latest and most serious in a series of legal problems for Mr. Hernandez, who has spent the last 2 years creating a divisive brand for himself.
A man wounded in a high-profile August 2017 police shooting has filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the city and the officer who shot him. An attorney for Demeek McDonald alleged in court papers that Officer Jared Iller subjected Donald to, quote, excessive, unreasonable, racist, and deadly force, unquote, on August 15, 2017. Video from the scene showed a bloodied McDonald, who was 22 at the time, pleading, "Why'd y'all shoot at me?" In July, a grand jury cleared Iller of any wrongdoing following an inquiry by Schenectady County District Attorney Robert Carney, who served as special prosecutor in the case after the recusal of Rensselaer County District Attorney Joel Abelove. After Carney released the grand jury's findings, McDonald's lawyer, Mark Mishler, said that he and his client were, quote, dismayed but not surprised by the outcome of this investigation, which unfortunately fits into a now standard pattern in this country by which police officers who use deadly physical force against unarmed civilians are rarely charged, end quote. An initial conference in the lawsuit case is scheduled for February 12th before U.S. Magistrate Judge Christian Hummel.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or heartwarming praise, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Hudson Mohawk Magazine roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry attended the 35th anniversary celebration of the Solidarity Committee of the Capital District at St. Andrew's Church in Albany on November 17, 2018, where he recorded a speech by Tom Ellis on the history of the Solidarity Committee and interviewed participants on their memories of solidarity over the past 35 years.
This is Willie Terry, your WOOC 105.3 roaming correspondent, and I'm in the streets of Albany here at the 35th anniversary of the Solidarity Committee of the Capital District. 35 years, from 1983 to 2018, and they're having their celebration here at St. Andrew's Church at 10 North Main Avenue, Albany, New York. I hope that I get a chance to talk to some of the coordinators to find out more about the 35th anniversary of the Solidarity Committee and where they're going from here. They have people who are talking about the history, Fred Pfeiffer, Tom Ellis, Melinda Perez, Sue DuBois, and Larry Whitter.
I'm Tom Ellis here. When people ask me what the Solidarity Committee of the Capital District is, or Solidarity, I tell them that it's where the labor, peace, and anti-racist movements in the capital region join forces. I think this is correct, but it's not inclusive enough. The Solidarity Committee is among the most democratic, welcoming, and influential small organizations I am aware of. The Solidarity Committee has laid the groundwork for many groups and activities. Our now slightly retired chairman, John Funicello, set the tone. He made sure everyone was welcome and invited to participate in a meaningful manner at all of our meetings and events. John continues to edit the newsletter, which gets better with each passing year. And John made sure that the Solidarity Committee did not have a narrow focus. He insists we have a national and international focus, and we advocate for all workers, including black farmers and people, all farmers and any people of color. The Solidarity Committee lives up to its name. If you attend a Solidarity Committee meeting on the second Thursday of each month at the Social Justice Center, you will get a great education on national, international, regional, and local issues and concerns and how to positively impact on them. The 10 or 20 most active people in Solidarity are among the most competent researchers, activists, and organizers around. We share resources, skills, and information. We are all leaders. Unlike many groups, we have avoided sectarian differences, and most of the members not only work well together, but we enjoy doing it. No challenge is too great for us. We are committed to making the world a better place, not only for organized labor, but everybody, and we are all volunteers. The meetings can be fun, too. We joke about Doug Bullock being the boss. In recent years, Doug is often late for meetings due to his growing responsibilities as an Albany County legislator. As you can see,
he's not made it here yet.
He's going to be here, though. When he comes through the door, someone will joke, "Oh, the boss is here." And Doug will jokingly say, "Get to work or I'll cut your pay." Each of us has our expertise and skills. Susan is the treasurer and an expert on trade issues and single payer issues. Fred and Art and John are among the know more about organizing workers, labor law, labor unions, their leaders past and present than any people I know, and have been doing labor organizing their whole adult lives. Art takes the lead each year organizing the May Day celebration, always a collaboration with activists outside the Solidarity Committee, and a constantly evolving event. Jim keeps us updated on the United States Post Office, and ongoing efforts that he and others are making to block its privatization. He makes sure that we get the notes in the correct postal trays, the count and labels are correct, so that we can quickly get the notes into the U.S. mail. Tam makes sure that when Solidarity has an event, such as the annual Labor Day picnic or the Martin Luther King celebrations, at which free food will be served, that we have enough food, that it's of high quality, and enough plates and napkins are on hand. As you can see, Tam did not organize the food for today's event. At these events, we all show up, we know what to do, and we get the job done correctly. Bill Ritchie is probably the best public speaker in our group, although the competition for this title is considerable. It is a pleasure to hear him speak. His passion is as intense as his knowledge of the issues. Larry Whitner is one of the top researchers and writers worldwide on the history of nuclear weapons and how it was the efforts of ordinary people like us who have again and again prevented nuclear war. Fred and Melanie keep us well informed on political events in Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America. They and many others keep the Solidarity Committee connected to immigrants and their activities. John Flanders and others travel to Cuba frequently and report on Cuban politics and economics. John has launched a separate project known as the James Connolly Forum, at which six or seven times a year top labor leaders and writers deliver lectures. Larry and Dorothy manage the film series held at the First Unitarian Universalist Society in Albany, at which great feature and documentary films are shown. Nearly all of these events are free and all are open to the public. Among the major successes of the Solidarity Committee is our newsletter, the Solidarity Notes, published each month and now sent to more than 1,200 people, most of whom live within 100 miles of Albany. Reading any one issue of the notes will allow the reader to grasp the wide scope of our concerns and advocacy work. Amazingly, the notes has been sent out each and every month for 35 years, except for one time when we had a combined issue. Once in 35 years. In 1999, the Solidarity Committee began the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Celebration, first held at the Wilburn Temple, later at Toast, and then more recently at the Hackett Middle School. And this event continued for more than 15 years. This labor event, sponsored by dozens of groups and individuals to hundreds of people, had a keynote speaker, poster contest, singing and dancing, workshops, and tabling by peace, labor, and justice groups. Unlike so many Martin Luther King holiday events, the labor celebration embraced Dr. King's many legacies in support of economic justice, racial integration, the beloved community, peace, and improving the lives of workers. Hopefully we can resume this celebration. When the Solidarity Committee celebrated its 30th anniversary in 2013, more than 15 labor unions took out advertisements in the event brochure. Several individuals wrote their thoughts on the group. One said, quote, "I feel honored to be a part of the Solidarity family. It is old school union, and it does not get any better than that," end quote. Another wrote, "Your citizen leadership at its finest. Carry on the fight for a just, peaceful, humane, and new America," end quote. And finally, I'd like to say that we're halfway through the Trump presidency. I don't think he's going to last 4 years. And we're going to survive him, and we're going to bury everything he stands for. Yeah.
Name. Gary Cunningham, USW Local 9265. We've been on many a picket with the Solidarity Committee. The most recent one was the Hilton picket with the workers down there, and I marched on probably about half a dozen pickets with them. I try to give as much time as I can with the Solidarity Committee. You know, I go to their annual picnic every year. I march on various rallies and pickets like that. And the program tonight was very excellent. Brought back a lot of memories. Everything they do, they're like they're down in the trenches doing the work of the middle class and the working class, and they do an excellent job day in and day out.
Thank you.
All right.
You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC's 105.3 FM, and you just heard a special report from the 35th anniversary celebration of the Solidarity Committee of the Capital Region. Tech Valley Game Space will soon be launching a new program to fund game developers in the Capital Region. WOOC correspondent Aaron Pettinati recently sat down with the Game Space's founder, Jamie Stevenson, to ask him about it.
Sorry about that. I'm Aaron Pettinati, and today I'm interviewing Jamie Stevenson, the founder of Tech Valley Game Space, about upcoming programs and projects that the Game Space is pursuing. Jamie, thanks for coming on the program again. Can you tell us about what the Game Space has in store for the near future?
Sure, I'd love to. Thanks, Aaron. So this is a really busy time for the game space. It's very exciting. We're launching a few new initiatives that have been in the works for quite a while now. So one event that's coming up very soon that seems good to mention off the bat is we run regular game jams at the space. And a game jam, for those that aren't familiar with the term, is sort of a creative hackathon. I know you might not be familiar with the term hackathon either. I wasn't until a while back. Essentially, it's a creative event where we encourage people to come together over a short span of time and create games together. Some people choose to work individually. Some people kind of make new friends and just make a creative, interactive project with them, usually over the course of a weekend or so. And we run those regularly at the space. We have one coming up on November 30th, which is called Ludum Dare, L-U-D-U-M, and then Dare, like Truth or Dare. And that's actually a very well-established online game jam, primarily. The largest online game jam continuously running in the world, I believe. So we always do a local meetup for that, even though it's taking place all over the world. So that weekend of November 30th, kicking off the Friday evening, we'll be having kind of an opening ceremony for it. We'll be doing sort of icebreaker activities, give people a chance to meet each other. And it's just a great, you know, way to make friends, potentially learn some new skills. You end up with whatever you end up with, so there's no reason to feel, you know, intimidated or anything. It's not a competitive thing. It's purely about kind of creatively collaborating. So Ludum Dare, definitely check that out. It's completely free to participate. And if you go to techvalleygamespace.com, you can see, you know, additional info and the dates and things like that if you forget. But it's November 30th. Another really exciting initiative that we're launching, I won't talk about too much since we've discussed it previously on the program, is Protostar, which we really want to encourage everybody to sign up for. Protostar is a new fund that Tech Valley Game Space is establishing that's specifically designed to support local game makers to be able to create prototype versions of game concepts. So purely to help with that kind of early stage, going from concept to just some kind of working, not completely polished and ready for market, but something that you can show that helps sort of illustrate your concept. So we have this fund called Protostar, and we're running our very first event where people can pitch game concepts in order to have a chance to be selected to receive some funds from the Protostar Fund. So that's the Protostar pitching event, and that's coming up December 9th. And you can sign up now at techvalleygamespace.com/protostar. So please do go and sign up. Even if you're, you know, you have some trepidation about whether or not your game concept is the right fit for this, I really encourage you to apply. You'll get some useful feedback, even if you don't happen to end up getting selected for funding. We'll be doing these in the future, so it's good practice. So those are two things, Ludum Dare and Protostar. Generally speaking, I just wanted to let people know that we have a free trial membership that's currently running. We have a limited pool of those to give away, and we've given away a good portion of them already. There's been a lot of interest, but we really want to use this free trial pool of free trial memberships to support people who are either doing something that's related to game development or just like really interested, even if you're just getting your start. The game space is a place where people of all experience levels, we encourage them to come together and support each other. And our mission is to encourage and enable everyone to create games. And a big piece of that is making sure that what we're doing is accessible to people of different economic means. So free trial membership is a way that we have of supporting that. If you wish to apply, then I would encourage you to go to techvalleygamespace.com/free. And there's an application there. And we evaluate each application on a case-by-case basis. In some cases, we will also award free trial memberships to people who don't have a demonstrable economic need, but just people we think are doing cool, creative stuff that we'd be happy to have try out the space for a little while. It can also just be a way of sort of checking out our co-working space, seeing if it's a right fit for you. So anyone and everyone, you know, do go and apply. There's no cost to apply and no harm in doing so. A couple of other things I wanted to mention is just we've been expanding the membership benefits that we provide to our members. We are a member-supported nonprofit organization, and the thing that we've always offered is co-working space. So we have a standard membership rate, which is $50 per month, which gives you 24/7 access to our shared co-working space. We have a lot of game development equipment that might otherwise be cost prohibitive to people, virtual reality headsets and things like this that all our members are able to access. And things of this nature. But more than that, we just have a really supportive community here that I think is really friendly and welcoming. And we just want to continue to grow that. And we'd love to have you be a part of it. So definitely sign up as a member at techvalleygamespace.com, whether through the free trial membership or not. And there's a few new benefits we're offering, as I mentioned. One of the things we've just introduced that we're very excited about is a kind of general support fund for local game makers who want to either enter their game project into a sort of contest or competition. There are many of these. They often have entry fees. We want to use this fund to be able to support people to get some more exposure. So if you want to submit your game to competitions but don't have the funds to pay for the entry fee, we can help support you there. And also to attend events. We're at a great crossroads location here in Albany where, you know, there's lots of game development events happening in places like Montreal and New York City and Boston and Rochester. And so we're aiming to support people who want to go showcase their games at those events or just attend them, you know, if they're for educational purposes or promoting yourself and your project purposes, all of these things. We evaluate all of these things currently on a case-by-case basis. So the first step would be to become a member there, since that is a member benefit, and then we provide more information from there. The last few things I want to mention are more ongoing things that are continuing, but that are great programs here at the space. We've just actually finished up our liftoff program, which was our diversity incubator. We had a wonderful cohort of women and non-binary game makers who were beginners or first timers who have created a game. We've just wrapped that up. We had some feedback that, you know, we had a lot of applicants for the program, a lot more than we could accept, and we didn't want people to feel discouraged. Our goal is to encourage and enable everyone. So we've posted all the lesson materials and everything from that program online for free, and you can check that out online. It's a bit of a mouthful, the URL, but it's techvalleygamespace.com/tags/liftoff2018 with hyphens in between the words of liftoff and 2018. So I encourage you all to check that out. And the last program that I want to mention is our mentorship program, which is called Orbit. There are different Orbit groups that meet at the space on a regular basis, usually a monthly basis, to discuss various topics related to game development. So there's a game art group, there's a virtual reality meetup, there's a meetup that specifically discusses diversity in games, and other topics as well. So if you go to techvalleygamespace.com/orbit, you can see a list of all of those groups. All of those are free and open to the public. You don't need to be a member to participate, and we'd love to have you join us.
Well, that sounds like a very diverse group of activities and programs. I wish you the very best of luck with that, and we'll look forward to having you back on the program again sometime soon to talk about more.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and that was Aaron Pettinati talking about Jamie Stevenson about Tech Valley Game Space's upcoming ProtoStar program.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org.
Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region. Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Kat Jones spoke with Chris about coming in from the cold, finally getting a place to live for the first time in 2 years. This is part of Kat Jones' series of interviews about real experiences with homelessness. We tend to imagine that people who are homeless are somehow so different from the rest of us that they are almost beneath notice for many people.
However, it's much easier to find oneself out on the streets than most of us think. Anyone could find themselves homeless. This interview teaches us that we should start thinking of individuals without homes as our neighbors and as much a part of our community as anyone else. This series explores what it's really like in the voices of people who have been there.
So this is Kat Jones with WOOC, and I'm here with Chris talking about something exciting. Tell me what's going on in your life right now, Chris.
I just got an apartment after being homeless, living in a bush in the park for about 2 years now.
Yay! How does it make you feel to finally have a place to live?
To be honest, Kat, it's a little still unreal, to be honest. It's something I'm excited to embark upon, living in somewhere that has a roof in it instead of, you know, a nice couple of branches to keep you from getting wet, but we'll see what happens.
You said that you were homeless for about 2 years. Tell me a little bit about your experience.
Well, being homeless, people look at you a different way. You live a way different lifestyle as someone who, let's say, isn't homeless. You hang out with a lot more undesirable people because most people think that being homeless means that you're nothing but a worthless drunken bum. But in my experience, there are quite a few people out there trying to live a better life.
If I remember right, you were working a lot of the time when you were homeless too. Is that right?
That's right, Kat, because like I said, I am one of those people who didn't want to live in a bush for the rest of my life.
Tell me how it happened that you got your keys today.
I had to wait on a couple lists. I constantly have to make appointments to show that I am trying to turn my life around, making better decisions. I have, to be honest with you, Kat, I have to go to drug group. I need to show that I'm responsible enough to take part in this apartment adventure.
When you were homeless, you said that people tended to look down on you. How did that impact your sense of self?
It's actually pretty horrific, the differences, because I'll be honest with you, Kat, I used to be one of those people who'd look at somebody asking for money at a street corner and be like, oh, just another bum, until I befriended most of those said bums and learned a little more about them. And like I said, a lot of people really don't want to be in the situations that they are, but the problem is, in a place like Albany, there's not too many opportunities for a person to better themselves or to get out of the holes that they personally think they have dug themselves in.
Thank you very much, Chris, and congratulations again on your new place.
That was just one interview in a series produced by Kat Jones featuring community members who have had experiences with homelessness.
Keep listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine to hear more interviews apart from that series. And check out our podcast for previous interviews you might have missed. Next on the show, WOC correspondent Kleena Lightborn sits down with local artist Liv McKee to talk about their upcoming book release entitled Bulb.
Capital People, I'm here with Liv McKee, a local poetess of the Capital Region. Liv, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So Liv, how did you first discover poetry?
Honestly, I think it was exploring on YouTube, like alone in the angsty days of my high school youth.
Yeah.
And then I started going to some coffee house open mics down in Poughkeepsie, New York, and eventually explored in the city a little bit at the New Yorican and really found a community of poets in the Hudson Valley, and we would write together. Yeah, it took off.
That's awesome. Okay, and so you mentioned a few places there, like YouTube and the New Yorican Poets Cafe and other poets. So do you have a few like key poets or artistic influences that really get your work going?
Yeah, I think initially it was definitely Andrea Gibson, who is an amazing queer poet. They won the first Women of the World Poetry Slam, and I really found release in watching their poems on YouTube and just realizing that someone could expel such emotion and honesty and raw vulnerability in that way at a time when I was really sad and struggling with a lot of things. It was deeply healing for me.
A couple of words I caught there, like release and vulnerability. Would you say that there's an overall tone to your works?
I would say that at least these days, I try to cultivate a really raw honesty in my work. I mean, it's all about healing for me and about finding new ways to express and hoping that other people can read my work and feel seen by it and relate to something and experience their own healing from that. I think the tone of my work, a lot of it is about my experience as a queer femme, my experience of the world in that way.
So you have an upcoming chapbook release. First of all, what is a chapbook? And can you tell us a little bit about it? Like what's the title and what can we expect from that?
Yeah. So a chapbook, I think of it as kind of halfway between a zine and a published like short novel. For me, it's a self-published book. It's all DIY. It's made with my printer at home, and it's going to be called Bulb, which I like because of the various meanings of that word. This collection it's about finding my sureness in my body, I would say, and sort of an evolution of that process. A lot of the earlier pieces in the book deal with trauma, be that my own trauma, intergenerational trauma, kind of communicating with elders and women who are no longer alive in my life. And the end of the book, I feel like, is sort of a redemption for all of us and a claiming of body, of space, of sexuality.
That sounds incredible. I'm really excited to check that out. So along with being a writer, you also have a couple of other projects that you, or I guess like love projects, if I should say. I know every Saturday folks could find you at a farmer's stand, right? Can you tell me a little bit about your life as a farmer?
I have worked for a lot of farms in, you know, the past 8 years or so all over the Hudson Valley. Farming is something that was also deeply healing for me, along with poetry, you know, getting, reestablishing my own connection with earth. And I found it very grounding as a youth and also now. So yeah, I work for various farms around here. I'm very passionate about growing food.
Great. Do you have a favorite crop or like a favorite task on the farm per se?
It depends. You know, there's magic in every piece of it, whether you're planting a seed or helping cultivate it or harvesting or bringing it to the market where all the people will be.
Has there ever been a time when you're like on the farm, maybe like working in the soil or in the field, and you just get like an amazing idea for a poem or something, and you're just like, oh my God, where am I going to write this? Like, what am I going to do? Like, what do you do?
I'm sure that's happened. That's kind of life in general as a poet. Someone said once at an event I was at that being a poet is like having homework every night for the rest of your life.
That's intense.
And that felt stressful, but but I think that's accurate. And yeah, I'm sure there's been times in the field or just in general, anywhere I am where I don't have a notebook or a phone or something. So you have to just desperately try to keep it in your head.
Awesome. Yeah. The Nitty Gritty Slam team recently came back from a national slam competition in Chicago, and you all did really well. How did you place?
We placed 24th out of about 80-something teams across the nation, which was amazing. We went farther in the competition than any Albany Slam team has ever gone before. We did that as a group of queer women who are all Pisces, which is great.
Hey.
are you a Pisces?
Diana? I am a Pisces. Oh, yes, it is a beautiful, wonderful, deep sign. Yes, all hail the Pisces.
But yeah, as a team, we made it to team piece finals, final stage for team pieces specifically, which was an amazing experience to have these poems that we worked on collaboratively take us to one of the final stages. It was an incredible experience, to say the least.
That's incredible. That's really, really awesome. Congratulations. Congratulations to your entire team.
Congrats to D. Colin, Amani Olugbala, and Laura Evelyn as well.
Yeah, congrats to all of you. I know that you're having a release party for your chapbook. What can we expect at this show?
I'm going to perform a couple slam pieces. This book is the first time that I've really approached. With this book, I really aimed to not just put my spoken word poetry on the page, but to really think critically about something people would want to read. So I'll probably also read a few of those poems, even though they're really meant to be read. And I also am going to have a dear friend of mine make a special appearance and do some musical accompaniment behind a poem.
That's great. That sounds really exciting. Where's the show going to be?
The release party will be at Troy Kitchen. I'll be featuring at Poetic Vibe for it, which is D. Collins' weekly poetry night here in Troy. So it'll be signups at 7 p.m. on Monday, November 19th, and the show starts around 7:30 with an open mic, so you can come out and share your stuff, and then I'll be doing a feature sometime after that with books for sale, and I also will have one of my poems I turned into what's called a broadside. It's like a big collage of poetry, so I'll have printouts of that for sale as well if you want something, you know, to hang on the wall.
Wonderful. Okay, so in some of your pieces, you're known to start out in a little song, and you are known to play guitar. Can we expect an album from you, a musical album, or more songwriting from you?
That is a definite forever goal of mine, growing in the various art forms that I do. I would love at some point to make a musical poetry album of sorts. That's definitely on my bucket list. What I have done in the past is combined one of my other loves, which is dance and poetry. I did a performance this past spring in Saratoga that was a really cool collaboration of poetry and dance all on stage at once. I had a headset. I was performing poetry while dancing with other dancers.
Incredible.
So yeah, I'm all about combining art forms and have many more ideas to come.
How incredible would it be for you to perform a dance to a song that you'd written?
That would be really cool.
That's like so meta. Would that be meta? I'm still learning how to use that word. What would you say is like your, well, this is hard to ask, so I'm not going to ask it this way. As a poet, there come times where you'll like write something, and I know that it's happened to me, where you'll like write something and like step away from it, and you're like, whoa, did I really just do that? Did I really come up with that term or those play on words? I'm sure that you've had moments like that, because like sitting down and listening to you, I'm always like mind blown. Can you share with us like a line or a piece that really has profoundly like affected you or kind of put you in this headspace of like, wow, like I am really cultivating and like crafting these words into a message that I really resonate with. And I'm really excited about the work that I'm putting out there into this community and into this world.
I love that question. I think that some of my experiences with that have been when I tried to approach different like specific forms of poetry. So like using a haiku or something, which is like a short biting poem with five, then seven, then five syllables. And I think trying to fit your ideas into this prescribed form already can be really exciting. So I'll share one of those.
Yes, please.
This is haiku for, and why would women's jeans need genuine pockets anyway? It's not like I carry lipstick or a scrawled number from the bar or this pepper spray.
Wow. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. Where can your new fans find you? Because obviously you've got like thousands now. So where can they all flock to follow your work and buy your chapbook and everything like that?
Thank you. Definitely my Instagram is where I'm most active. My handle is at LivSpoken, L-I-V spoken, one word. My Facebook is also LivSpoken. I'm working on my website, so stay tuned. And you can also always email me at livespokenpoet@gmail.com for any booking inquiries.
Great. Well, thank you so much again for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cleanna.
Yes. So there you have it, Liv McKee, Pisces, dancer, farmer, poet, and capital person. Have a great day.
That was an interview about Liv McKee, a local poet of the Capital Region, talking about her upcoming book titled Bulb.
WOOC Roman correspondent Lily Terry reported on the healthcare protest rally at the Troy Hilton Hotel on November 15, 2018, against the New York Health Plan Association campaign to stop passage of the New York State Health Act that would create a single payers healthcare system in New York State. This is part one of his report.
Yeah, this is your WOOC Roman correspondent Willie Terry. I'm out here in the streets on Hoosick and Burdett on this busy highway, and I'm heading down to the Hilton Hotel where there's a demonstration going on about health insurance. I see people already down there, so I'm making my way down.
And the nurses started to plead with him to stay and have the operation. He was in bad shape, but he decided not to and left with his heart 95% blocked. That is the system that we have today. I don't know what happened to him, but it was a horrifying thing to have to witness, and I'll never forget it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm at the rally right by the Hilton, and I have as my guest.
My name is Sean Petty, and I'm a pediatric emergency room nurse and a member of the New York State Nurses Association.
And Sean, what is the purpose of the rally today?
Well, we're here because as we speak here at the Hilton Garden Inn in Troy, there's a conference of health insurance industry executives, pharmaceutical company, lobbying firms, hospital executives who are planning and plotting how to both make more profits, make more money as an industry at the expense of patients' lives and patients' health. And they're also planning how to disrupt and block what we think is incredibly necessary healthcare reform, which we call Medicare for All. And that means a system that everybody is covered, everybody gets access to healthcare, and that's paid for through people's contributions that they would be paying these executives that make their billions of dollars, but it all gets put into a pool to make sure everybody is covered and we have a better healthcare system. So we're here protesting this industry that doesn't add any value to the healthcare system. They only take away. They take away profits, and they deny people health care. And we want a health care system that works for everybody.
Now, is this the only rally going on today?
Well, actually, we're going to take a break and come back around 2:30 and picket for another hour to continue to let them know about how we feel. And hopefully, as the conference is finishing up, as they're walking away, they can see us face to face, you know, and they can see, you know, that we're not going away. We're not going to stay in the shadows. They've largely gotten away with their greed and their life-ending decisions, largely in the shadows. But we want to say that we're going to be visible. We're going to be here, and we're not going away.
And you're in the New York State Nurses Association?
That is correct. I'm on the board of directors of the New York State Nurses Association, and I'm a pediatric emergency room nurse in the Bronx, New York.
All right. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
And I have as my guests some of the people that participated in the protests over at the Troy Hilton. And I have, again, as my guest,
Jen James from Democratic Socialists of America.
Brandon Quickie from ACT UP New York, which is the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power.
Katie LaSalle from Democratic Socialists.
Yulene Koshu with PNHP, Physicians for a National Health Program, and the Campaign for New York Health.
And Bob Lederer from Physicians for a National Health Program.
And I'm just going to ask the question, maybe anybody can answer it. What was the reason for the protest today?
So the New York Health Plan Association had their annual conference today. The theme of this conference was the intersection of healthcare and politics. So they were directly discussing how they can organize to prevent single-payer healthcare and continue their lucrative business making profits off of our healthcare system.
So the healthcare issue, is that a big issue that people are talking about in the country today?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we just saw the state Senate flip from Republican to Democrat. And now we have a supermajority. The people who won, a lot of them ran on a progressive platform that centered the New York Health Act, and nationally Medicare for All is being demanded from the marker of a progressive politician, and those candidates are winning.
So what is the group that y'all was protesting against? Who was that group?
It was the New York Health Plan Association, which is kind of like a consortium of, healthcare insurance professionals and maybe lobbyists too in New York State, who are, you know, trying to preserve the monopoly that the current system has over our healthcare system. So
what did you hope to accomplish today based on the protest?
Well, I believe that we accomplished a couple things. One, we attended part of their conference, and we saw the ways that they're already starting to spread essentially lies about single-payer healthcare. And we heard their talking points, and we are preparing accordingly. What we also accomplished was we showed them that we are listening, that we are going to keep fighting against them, and we know that they are afraid of that because they said that. On one of the panels, they said that they were, the woman who leads the Business Council of New York State said that she was afraid of single payer as a possibility. And so we put that fear in them. And we also showed up together in solidarity in our coalition. And it was just the first step in a series of rallies and actions. So thank you.
Okay. Is this an ongoing campaign?
Yeah, actually, this is the first salvo. It's the opening salvo in a campaign to highlight for the public and to bring pressure on the for-profit health insurance industry, which has played such a destructive role in impeding access to care for people all over New York State and, of course, around the country as well. But in New York State, we're emphasizing the fact that the bill has passed the assembly 4 years in a row, the New York Health Act, the single-payer universal health system legislation, would completely transform everyone's access to health care. Everyone would be guaranteed from cradle to grave, whether they're employed or unemployed, documented or undocumented immigrant or citizen, would all be entitled as a right to health care without any costs at the point of service. And we want to highlight that this kind of a system, which is like many of the industrial countries around the world, is something that should be just the normal course of events. And that system does not have any place for an exploitive health insurance industry that their business model is designed based on denying people access to the care they need. So today what we're doing is we're saying, you know, if you're going to have a conference to sit around and strategize about how to lie to the public of New York State and how to use your campaign contributions to legislators to try to block the kind of legislation that would bring about health care for all, then we are going to oppose you and expose you at every turn. And that's what we did today, both a picket outside with up to a total of 40 people throughout the day, and inside these four courageous people who went in and risked the possibility of arrest for simply exercising their First Amendment rights to say, stop your lies. We demand health care for all. Stop blocking legislation that is immensely popular and that is one of the reasons why the Democrats now have a majority in the state Senate, is that many of them campaigned on support for this bill, the New York Health Act.
That was correspondent Willie Terry reporting on the healthcare protest rally at the Troy Hilton Hotel on November 15th. This year of 2018, against the New York Health Plan Association campaign to stop passage of the New York State Health Act that would create a single-payer healthcare system in New York State. And now, what you were waiting for, another story about the farmers market by my co-host, Dave. Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm standing now on South River Street in Troy, New York, in the two-block section as you move away from Monument Square towards the bridge. The streets are lined with small businesses. At the Farmers Market Community Workshop 2 weeks ago, several of these storefront vendors approached the Farmers Market management team about an open issue that's been going on for a long time, which is the reach of the farmers market and how these vendors are adversely affected by the streets being blocked off every Saturday for 6 months at a time and the loss of business, both from the inability for cars to drive down the street to the visual perception for pedestrians that where the farmers market ends, all interest ends in terms of businesses.
I'm Maria Levin. I own Sawtooth Jewelry Studio. I'm on the Lower River Street neighborhood, and we have been asking the farmers market, businesses that were there long before me, have been asking the farmers market to please extend the vendors down our block, because right now the traffic to our neighborhood on Saturdays, which should be a retailer's busiest day of the week, is blocked by the location of the farmers market. We get multiple phone calls a week in my shop personally from people that say, I tried to come on Saturday, but I can't get there. Is there a street festival? What's going on? So we hear from customers. We're a service-based business. We hear from customers all the time that are trying to get to us and can't get to us on Saturdays. And we've been asking the farmers market for quite some time to help us out and you know, just stretch the market out and spread down our block a little bit. And we were all under the assumption that we would have a chance maybe for some public comment at this meeting. And when that didn't happen, everyone got up here and got pretty upset and tried to, tried to get the attention of the people that are running this meeting and just feel like our voices were being heard beyond sticking a post-it note to a diesel.
So how long have you been talking to
different people? Because it sounds like you've gone through several iterations.
It's been through a few iterations. We've been in meetings with the bid regarding this, and they're like, our hands are tied. The market's their own entity. And then the market says, oh, well, the market's run by a board, so they'll have to vote on it, so I can't really give you an answer. So, you know, in just the 6 months that we've been asking for some help, I've seen, you know, one market, the Liz is no longer, I think, you know, now Zach has taken over for Liz, and so I don't have the history. Jimmy and Teresa, who owns the bead shop, I think she may have left already, they are tenants of our block for 10 and 15 years. They have a little more experience, and when we were all like, yay, we're going to go to this meeting, and it's going to be great, and our voices are going to be heard, they kind of rolled their eyes. They're like, we've been through this before, and here we are. Closed our shops early, came down on a weeknight in hopes of getting through to people, and here we are again.
We've been continually promised that the farmers market will extend down to the end of our street. Every year we stock up on product, we add new things in our store, we pull out the welcome mat, and then they block the streets. They are like a third world country up there, jammed in, and it's completely devastated our businesses. Instead of thriving, we're surviving. We work hard, we pay taxes, we're there day after day. All my neighbors, I've lost 6 to 8 neighbors in the past 4 years because of the farmers market, because they can't exist. You can't exist without Saturday. I have a record business, and my customers are faithful. They know how to get there. People don't know how to get there. They have no idea how to get there. Our streets are blocked. And all of our parking space is wasted. No one's in our garage. Our streets are just empty, completely empty on Saturday. Business is horrendous, and that's 8 months, 6 to 8 months a year when they're there. But the other problem is we've been consistently told that this would not be happening, and it happens every season. And it's gotten to the boiling point now, and we're prepared to take action. We're not sitting around anymore.
All right, so we have to cut that story a little bit short because we're running out of time. The entirety of it is available at soundcloud.com/mediasanctuary. And just to give you a brief summary, that group of store owners met with a representative from the Troy Farmers Market, and they basically gave them a proposal, and they're supposed to have a second meeting in about 2 weeks, so we will report back on that. And in the meantime,
That concludes our show. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Tatiana Morani.
And I'm Dave Pueblo. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. If you have comments, suggestions, or the sudden urge to express your gratitude, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
As a reminder, WOOC is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, don't be shy. Go ahead and shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org. We welcome everyone. We promise we won't bite you. You can also stop by one of our weekly meetings held on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy. But until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.